Brown say or imply that we should not continue to support and supply Israel with weapons. He merely said, having been asked to express his opinion, that, from a military standpoint, Israel was not a blessing. However, no sooner did the text of General Brown's interview reach the media than a wave of hysteria swept the country. Letters flooded the editorial offices of the nation's newspapers condemning General Brown's remarks as anti-Semitic. President Ford hurriedly apologized for General Brown, obviously concerned that this many voices, including such usually sensible people as Senator Howard Baker, demanded that General Brown be fired. Leaders of major Jewish organizations called on President Ford to censure General Brown. After a special meeting of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, it was announced, rather ominously, that the Jewish community does not consider the matter of General Brown to be closed. General Brown's heinous offense was that he failed to say that Israel was. One lonely voice dared to risk the awful banishment. Senator Barry Goldwater is quoted in the Los Angeles Times. "I agree with him, General Brown," Goldwater said in an address to the Inland Daily Press Assinpoint's annual fall meeting. "We can't continue to give any country equipment from our own inventory and not deplete our own war machine." Later, in explaining his remark, he said, "Israel has gotten everything she ever wanted from the US, in some categories, more than she can use." He said that it was alright with him, but if we give Israel $2 billion in equipment, then let's buy $2 billion for ourselves. Unless we regain our military superiority, he said, the only choice can be nuclear war or surrender. Goldwater said, that was what Brown was trying to say, only he was misunderstood. Emphasis: The Wall Street Journal tried to restore some semblance of common sense into this irrational scene, and offered the following editorial comment. "Various overedge New York politicians, unfortunately including Senator James Buckley, are demanding General Brown's ouster as a result. Senator Mondale, who is not supposed to be the hatchet man on his team, is likening General Brown to a sewage commissioner. But an honest appraisal of the drift of his remarks would have to indicate he is not suggesting Israel's abandonment, and that his observations are probably clear-eyed and correct. It looks to us as if General Brown's real sin is excessive candor, which leaves us confused, since we thought everyone agreed our leaders needed to be more candid, not less so. If Governor Carter wants to pursue the matter and set a higher standard, he may as well announce that in a Carter administration no interviews will be granted except by officials. What must be resisted and overcome is simply this kind of covert and overt intimidation, the mischievous result of the taboo, the existence of a gag rule on discussing openly and disagreeing frankly with the Israeli partisans. There is obviously no freedom of speech on the subject of Israel when the Chief of Staff of the Armed Forces of the US cannot say that Israel is not a military blessing without causing a national uproar and suffering the threat of being fired. The intimidation has worked, as intended. General Brown has been apologizing ever since. The successful efforts to intimidate the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, as well as the President of the United States, clearly defeat and frustrate the very purpose of the guarantees of freedoms of speech and press. These freedoms are just as effectively curtailed by intimidation, and expression of opinion is entitled to protection, no matter how unorthodox or abhorrent it may seem to others. The basis of the free speech guarantee of the First Amendment is the hypothesis that speech can rebut speech, that propaganda will answer propaganda, and that free debate of ideas will result in the wisest governmental policies. The right of free speech and free press guaranteed by the Constitution extends to all subjects which affects ways of life, without limitation to any particular field of human interest, and includes in the main freedom of expression on political, sociological, religious, and economic freedom of discussion must embrace all issues about which information is needed or appropriate to enable the members of society to cope with the exigencies of their period. Thornhill vs. State of Alabama, 60. Never has our society been in greater need of a full discussion of critical issues, so that we can cope with the exigencies of the time. There are few issues now confronting our country that do not directly or indirectly involve a solution to the Middle East problem. If freedom of speech and press have any meaning or value at all, it is here and now. The paralyzing fear of violating the taboo, which grips the Congress as well as the executive branch of the government, is nowhere better illustrated than in the case of Senator Fulbright. Senator Fulbright speaks out on April 15, 1973. Senator J. William Fulbright appeared on the CBS Face the Nation program. In the nationally televised interview, he said that the administration was unable to exert pressure on Israel for a Middle East settlement because the U.S. Senate was subservient to Israel. He added that despite the fact that the U.S. provided Israel with a major part of the wherewithal to finance or pay for everything Israel does, leverage could not be applied, he said, because Israel controls the Senate, Fulbright declared. We should be more concerned about the U.S. interest, rather than doing the bidding of Israel. On May 30, at the opening of two-day hearings that his committee initiated on the energy situation, Fulbright charged that U.S. policy was to give Israel unlimited support for unlimited expansion. He urged U.S. cooperation with oil producing in a return appearance on Face the Nation, October 7, 1973. Senator Fulbright repeated his assertion that the Israelis control Mideastern policy in the Congress and the Senate. When the program monitor called Fulbright's statement a fairly serious charge, the Senate Foreign Relations Committee chairman countered, "The charge is a fact of life. Here we have the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee charging publicly, on two separate occasions, that the Senate of the US was subservient to a foreign power, a charge vastly more serious than anything involved in the Watergate scandal." Either the charge was true or Senator Fulbright, who was certainly in a position to know, was lying to. If the latter was the case, then Senator Fulbright grossly insulted and impugned the integrity of the U.S. Senate. If so, why was not an immediate investigation called for? Why was there no public outcry and a demand for censure by the Senate? Senator Joe McCarthy's charges were nothing compared with the gravity of Senator Fulbright's accusation. There is, of course, no mystery. There was nothing for the Senate to investigate, because every senator knew full well that Senator Fulbright's charge was indeed the truth. But Senator Fulbright paid the price for truth. He was courageous, or foolhardy, enough to violate the taboo, and was put on the Jewish enemies list, and was banished from public life, by being defeated. For incredible as it sounds, there is more freedom of speech and press in Israel than in the US Senate or the American media. Yet the Israeli lobby continues relentlessly to be more Israeli than the Israelis in Israel, where there is strong opposition to the Likud policies. In his recent work, entitled Israel's Fateful Hour, referred to earlier in this chapter, Yehoshaphat Huckabee, Israel's foremost expert in Arab relations and former chief of military intelligence and advisor to Prime Minister Begin, makes certain bitter criticisms of the US which are shocking in their. Huckabee complains that the US government has allowed Israel to pursue policies which will inevitably be calamitous for Israel. He points out that by not speaking out against the Israeli government's policies, such as the West Bank settlements, the US has misled the Israeli public into thinking that the US supports the settlements. He begs the US to speak frankly and to make its position clear instead of speaking timidly as it always has. He emphasizes that the US not only has the right but the duty to speak out. He is bitter that the behavior of the U.S. was such that it was interpreted by many Israelis as meaning that the annexation policy of Mr. Begin was correct, leading them to idolize, to vote for, and support the approach of the Likud and the Gush Emunim. He believes that the U.S. has not been a true friend of Israel, because a real friend is one who does not endorse all our views, but, on the contrary, despite the anger it may incur, draws our attention to our errors and insensitivities. Finally, he expresses this lament: "I fail to understand why they, the US, are so apprehensive of speaking out and saying that the present policy of annexation will miscarry, that it is bound to fail, that it will end in national bankruptcy, or that it is suicidal, whatever is their evaluation. By such diffidence Americans do a disservice to Israel and to themselves." Emphasis supplied, were Yehoshaphat Huckabee to read this and the following two chapters, he would learn that the timidity and apprehension is no mystery. He would learn that those in our government with the courage to speak frankly and as a true friend of Israel are no longer with the government. They have been banished. All of Huckabee's charges and complaints are valid and true. The